Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Foray et al. Titled, Maternal High-Fat, High-Sucrose Diet Induces Transgenerational Cardiac Mitochondrial Dysfunction Independent of Maternal Mitochondrial Inheritance. This article was published March 22, 2019. Joining me today are Deputy Editor Mary Lindsay, authors Abhinav Diwan and Kelly Moley, and content expert Linda May. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara. Dr. Foray and colleagues evaluated transgenerational effects of maternal obesity on cardiovascular health of the offspring. In a mouse model, the moms were given a diet of high fat and high sucrose, and the offspring, through three generations, were monitored. Kelly, can you tell us what the motivation was to do these studies and briefly summarize the experimental design?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we, as well as others, had previously shown that a high-fat, high-sucrose diet fed to mice had long-term effects on the adult offspring. These effects included hyperglycemia, hyperinsulinemia, hypercholesterolemia, obesity, all as adults. Since that time, more studies have corroborated this in humans as well. But the mechanism wasn't clear, and we wanted to find out the timing of the maternal insult leading to these physiologic effects. And since I'm a reproductive biologist and specifically an oocyte biologist, I hypothesize that the early earliest time period prior to conception might be a possible time. And this was due to some ill effects that we had seen of the high-fat diet on oocyte mitochondria. And we believed that this was possibly an oocyte mitochondrial effect. And this led us to the study. Now, for the design, we used three-week-old C57 black mice on this high-fat, high-sucrose diet at 3 weeks right after weaning. And we kept them on the diet until about 12 weeks of age. They then mated with males who were fed a regular diet. And then the males were removed from the cage. The mice were then fed the diet for a continued 12 weeks. And then the pups were allowed to be born, and they were weaned to a control diet. And then they were examined at 10 weeks of age, and this is when we found the findings that we did.
Okay, I see. That experimental design is quite elegant. Linda, what do we already know about maternal obesity and cardiovascular disease in the offspring?
That's a great question, Mary. This idea of women who are obese when they're pregnant, give birth to obese children is common, and the idea or the thought is called the Barker hypothesis, which is basically that the baby's environment in utero is influencing the baby not just as it's developing, but after birth and long-term health as it grows up into an adult. And so this is really important from a public health perspective because in the U.S. we know that about 1 in 3 women of reproductive age are obese. And so these studies have translational and public health relevance.
I see. Abhinav, the F1 to F3 descendants were not obese, yet showed cardiac mitochondrial abnormalities and reduced oxygen consumption. What is the significance of this finding?
So this was a very intriguing observation in the study that the offspring, despite not being obese and despite not being challenged by the diet, demonstrated cardiac mitochondrial abnormalities. This is particularly relevant because, as researchers know from experience, trying to model cardiac abnormalities in mice with feeding a high-fat or a high-sucrose diet is very difficult. And it rarely leads to adverse effects in the heart that can be quantified with the known measures. And in this study, the moms that were exposed to the diet did not manifest the cardiac abnormalities. In the context of this, it is amazing that the pups manifested that. This finding is significant in the context of increased LV mass, which in humans has been associated with pathologic outcomes in a variety of disease scenarios, unless the increased mass is in athletes or in pregnant women, for example, where it is qualified as physiologic hypertrophy. It's important to understand that the abnormal mitochondria signify perhaps an abnormal muscle quality, which could result in altered metabolism. In the grand scheme of things, this could be a predisposing factor for further bad outcomes such as heart failure, and future studies need to study that carefully.
The results that you showed in this article really had such complicated nuances to it. I imagine that your lab meetings must have been very interesting discussing how to digest this data and what the results mean. Following up on what Abhinav said about the left ventricle mass, Kelly, the effect on LV mass persisted in extra generation in the males. What does this mean?
Yeah, this was one of the most exciting findings that we had. And I think what it suggests then is that in addition to the LV mass, we saw a real change in mitochondrial dysfunction. We saw abnormal high-resolution spirometry and also morphology. So we knew there was at least a structural and a metabolic dysfunction. And really the fact that this corroborated with left ventricular hypertrophy was quite interesting. And that's what we saw, was an eccentric hypertrophy. We can't say that it was pathologic yet, but it's possibly pathologic, and we're doing further studies to really prove that it was. But I think what this really points to is that something is happening in response to this maternal diet that was initially manifested, at least in the appearance of the oocyte mitochondria. And what we think in the experiments we've done is that this has significant long-term effects that are probably epigenetic, and that's why we did see it in the L2 and the L3, not so much the LV mass increase, but instead what we saw in all three generations were significant differences in high-resolution spirometry and morphology that correlated with both generation 1, 2, and 3.
The observation of the phenotype in the males also points to transgenerational transmission, and it is particularly intriguing because this suggests that it may not be mitochondrial transmission, because maternal mitochondria are inherited through the mitochondrial DNA in the offspring. It's important to nuance this statement by indicating that recent studies have pointed to perhaps a small fraction of paternal mitochondria being subsequently observed in the offspring. So this leaves the door open to carefully examine whether mitochondria from the males could have contributed to the phenotype or not. Our studies convincingly showed that maternal mitochondria are not required for transmitting the effect.
Kelly, explain the in vitro fertilization experimental design to us and how this was an important control for you to separate out the genetics versus the epigenetics versus the environment.
I think the thing was the initial insult obviously had to happen from in the maternal oocyte, since that's what carries to all the offspring and all the cells and all the offspring. So it was carried there, but then the mitochondrial effect was nuclear, and that was the finding that we found. It was the nuclear effect, most likely epigenetic, that then allowed this to be carried on for three generations. But it was initially the oocyte that carried that, and the damage to the oocyte that carried that to the offspring.
So Linda, these conclusions are very interesting. What is the significance of showing that the male F1 also transmitted the effects to their offspring?
So, Mary, that is a great question. I think these are really interesting findings in an elegant study that showed that maternal obesity from a high-fat, high-sugar diet programs this transgenerational mitochondrial and heart defects that's independent of the maternal mitochondria and suggests epigenetic changes have occurred.
Yeah, very exciting. And Kelly, just remind us, did it matter if the mom was obese only during pregnancy or if she had to be obese during weaning as well?
That's a great question. We didn't look at the weaning period. Basically, these moms were on the high-fat diet throughout gestation and then into weaning as well. And when the mice were weaned, the pups were placed on a controlled diet. But I think our IVF question really answers that concern. We fed the mice a high-fat, high-sugar diet, and we removed the ovaries and then removed the oocytes and performed in vitro fertilization. And then we then transferred those embryos back into mouse on a totally normal diet who had never seen a high-fat diet. And so that would eliminate the problem that may come up or may arise with the high-fat diet during weaning. These mice who were born from the IVF-conceived pregnancies all showed very similar phenotype to those mice that had been in utero during the high-fat, high-sugar diet.
I really like all the controls that were done in this study. Abhinav, I want to talk about the source of the mitochondria. We assume it's due to predominantly the cardiomyocytes because of their large volume in the heart. But there's other cardiac cells that are contributing, in particular the cells I study, macrophages and fibroblasts. And so are there any plans in the future to look at source contributions of the individual cell types within the heart?
So that is a very intriguing question, Mary. Again, as you mentioned, because the cardiac myocytes are such mitochondria-rich cells, and by volume, they constitute 90% of the heart. Our hypothesis is that the changes that we are observing, which we confirm by electron microscopy in cardiac myocytes, do happen in cardiac myocytes. But we cannot exclude the possibility that mitochondrial abnormalities are also present in inflammatory cells, for example, macrophages and the resident macrophages. This would be critical because abnormal mitochondria have been linked to pro-inflammatory stimuli or generation of pro-inflammatory mediators in the cells through abnormal metabolism. So future studies will need to carefully evaluate the effects of the immune response in contribution to the pathology. Similarly, abnormal mitochondrion fibroblasts could be speculated to activate them, perhaps to a myofibroblast stage. We do not have any evidence for these speculative hypotheses at this point, but they're very intriguing and will be the focus of future studies.
The concept of immunometabolism is definitely on the rise in popularity right now. And so I like that you guys have given consideration to the other cell types besides the myocytes that could be having a secondary role as well. So Kelly, one of the major take-home messages for me from this study was that while you did not see a huge pathology in the offspring, starting life from an obese mom could provide a first hit mechanism that could amplify the response to later cardiovascular disease. What do you think?
That's a great question. I do think that our model was limited in some ways to a mouse model because we did not feed the mice the high-fat diet after birth, meaning conceivably in humans that infant came from a mom who was on a high-fat, high-sugar diet, and she didn't go to immediately a regular control diet. And therefore, the babies are probably being exposed to a deleterious diet after birth in humans. So I do think this is most likely an initial hit of mitochondrial dysfunction that then could conceivably accelerate faster in humans than in mice just based on environmental and other dietary influences.
Okay. Linda, anything to add to that concept?
Definitely more research needs to be done, but it definitely is supporting this transgenerational effect that we see from the maternal exposure, and moms really need to do a better job, even if they don't think that they will be pregnant, they need to do a better job of taking care of their health because of this transgenerational effect. But it'll be really interesting to see some of this elegant design applied to human studies and following kids as they get older. So very interesting.
I agree. I could easily see a lot of spin-off studies from this one manuscript.
As an OBGYN, I don't want to send the message that it's all mom's fault. I mean, I think we're in an era where we are exposed to so many poor diets that it's just wise to recommend that women really consider getting themselves into shape before getting pregnant.
Absolutely.
And that this is the best possible outcome, not only for their child, but for them as well. So I'd like to just kind of put that out there that, you know, we don't want to totally be blaming the mom, but we want her to be cognizant of the fact that her diet throughout her life will have long-term effects on her and her children and her grandchildren, and perhaps even more.
Absolutely. Well, I would say her diet and her activity, you know, all of her environmental health is important for her to take care of herself for future generations. Absolutely.
Those are great concepts. So Kelly and Abanoff, what are the next steps from here?
That is an excellent question, as this study raises many more ideas to chase further. Building on the theme of the first hit hypothesis, we would like to know if additional hits or stresses to the heart could predispose the heart or sensitize the heart to development of heart failure, for example. That would be very relevant to the clinical outcomes that we see in individuals. And there could be a link in humans as well that could be examined in epidemiologic studies. Another intriguing facet is a potential developmental effect on the heart in the offspring. And I say that, again, tracking back to my original observation that while the mom did not have a phenotype the pups had a phenotype in the heart. The one difference between the mom and the pups is that the pups were exposed to these potential epigenetic changes through cardiac development also. So future studies should carefully look at how maternal diet affects cardiac development. We will pursue studies to profile the epigenetic changes both in the oocytes as well as the hearts to determine what could be the mechanism for these findings.
Dr. Dewan and Dr. Moley, thank you for publishing this very interesting work in AJP Heart. Dr. May, thank you for discussing it with us. Back to you, Kara.
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this one, visit us online at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.